to welcome everyone here this morning. Thank you for being here. We're delighted to have you. Before we begin, I want to introduce the panel. To my right is Justice Elizabeth Kerr, and to my left is Justice Dabney Basil, and I'm Bonnie Setters, the Chief Justice of the Court. We have one case to be argued at 10:30, and I understand the attorneys are here and ready, so I'll ask the clerk to please call the case.
Please the court. Good to be back again. I'm proud to represent the City of Fort Worth. With me is Chris Mosley with the City Attorney's Office. Gerald Pruitt recently retired, but was on this case when it was argued here the first time, and Joe Greenhill. The Supreme Court remanded on two questions, and first is whether the operation of eightliners violates Article 3, Section 47A of the Texas Constitution, and second, whether the fuzzy animal exception to the penal code, section 40, chapter 47, is itself unconstitutional. I'm going to address both issues. Let me turn to the unconstitutionality issue first.
Just to make sure that I understand correctly, is it your opinion that we have to address both of those, or could we go with one and not the other, or do they travel together?
You could go with either one. The way the opinion, the last decretal part of the opinion is written, either one would decide the issue that the Supreme Court, I think, once decided. On the constitutional grounds, in 1876, the legislature proposed and the voters approved Article 3, Section 47A of the current Constitution, which prohibits all lotteries that are not expressly authorized. You don't have to take my word for that. That is actually Justice Boyd's decision in this case at page 461. Tussie versus State from the Court of Criminal Appeals decided the same thing in 1973 in a very similar situation in which the legislature had tried to authorize some bingo activities by charitable groups, and the court said, nope, you can't do that by legislation. You can do it only by constitutional amendment. As you know, and as we have, and I think both parties agree, the Constitution has been amended a number of times to add different types of things that would otherwise be considered lotteries, things that deal with some with chance. For example, the state-operated lottery and the like, charitable bingos, raffles, and things like that. They've done that in a series of amendments. Now, the controversy between us is because the term lottery in 47A is undefined. But Texas Supreme Court has defined it a number of times. The Supreme Court of the United States has also defined it as well, and as many other jurisdictions. The standard definition is a three-element definition that basically says if a prize is offered and you win it by a term of chance in exchange for a consideration, you've got a lottery. That was the definition used in the city of Wink in 1936 by the Texas Supreme Court, and it accumulated a number of cases. Additionally, then-Attorney General, now Governor Abbott, put a compilation of cases together in a 2003 AG's opinion, reaching the same conclusion and surveying a number of cases. Even the Rob Rowley United case from the Waco Court of Appeals in 39 said the same thing and said there were enlisted a number of cases it called innumerable cases supporting the three-element definition. But probably for our purposes, the most important is Randall versus State in 1874. Let me explain why. Randall was decided a year before the Constitutional Convention of 1875, which rewrote and recodified, if not codified, that'd be an improper term to use with the Constitution, but completely redid the Texas Constitution and was the last successful Texas Constitutional Convention, the most recent one happening at least in my lifetime, not some of yours, but it failed. So the truth of the matter is 1875 was an important year. The voters approved that Constitution on the ballot the next year in 1876. So in 1874, Randall explained what the term lottery meant, and it used the three-element definition I just gave you and said that is what is meant. Now, in a textual review of a constitutional issue, it's important to look to the intent of the people who wrote the constitutional provision that was eventually adopted by the voters and what was meant at that contemporaneous time. Randall gives us that answer, and it is clear. There is beyond a doubt, and although there are some criticisms of cases, can be no criticism of Randall. It truly did deal with a lottery-type issue, a spinning wheel from which there were 80 numbers, 12 were picked. People were given slips of paper with multiple numbers on them. If they matched one, they got their money back. If they matched two, they got one sum of money. If they matched three, they got another payment. So no doubt that that is the case. The other side points out slot machines and video games weren't in existence in 1875. Very true. Actually, they came very quickly thereafter. And as soon as they did, within 6 years, the Court of Criminal Appeals determined that they were an impermissible lottery under the 1875 Constitution and 47A. Pendergast versus State was the first one to do it in 1899. Queen versus the State was the second one. It was interestingly written by David Evans' grandfather, Judge Lattimore, and he said there was no doubt that a slot machine met the three-prong definition, therefore it was a lottery. Queen versus State is important to us for another reason, and that is it is cited with approval by Justice Boyd in the Texas Supreme Court opinion in this case. Attorney General's opinions have done the same thing. I won't go into great detail with that now. Two from Dan Morales, two from Greg Abbott when he was the Attorney General. One significant brief in a case we'll discuss in a minute by now Senator Cornyn when he was AG, written by Greg Coleman, which I think got the law right. But the United States Supreme Court has looked at this too. And in the Federal Communications, or FCA, versus ABC, NBC, and CBS, the issue was, what is the definition of lottery? There they had a sales program where if you watched and answered certain questions, you had an opportunity to win something. Chief Justice Warren decided that was not a lottery because there wasn't really any consideration, but defined and surveyed the cases because that term was not defined in the statute either, and surveyed cases of different states, including Texas, and found, nope, lottery is the three-prong deposition that we tell you. Bottom line is this. The three-element definition that we've advocated to you is the definition of lottery. Also, you will see, and we'll talk a little bit more in a moment, Appendix C to our appellant's brief on remand contains the stipulation or the statement of undisputed facts that the parties entered into. They agree that their machines offer a prize. The machine is played solely by chance. There's no opportunity to manipulate it by any type of skill at all. In fact, only the machine and the operator can manipulate the outcome. And finally, it requires the player to give some consideration. Now, that makes it an unconstitutional lottery under 47A. They have a number of defenses that need looking into. First, they say there's got to be something more than the three elements. Well, what is it? They don't tell us. And they didn't tell the Supreme Court either, even though they briefed it to the Supreme Court as well. Second, they said, the legislature has discretion.
They do tell us, I think, in their summary of the argument, saying the added element is a drawing among persons.
The drawing?
Among persons.
Your Honor, I took their brief to say something slightly different but we agree that they offer some type of explanation that really what they say the earlier Constitution of 1845 control this, and they didn't know these kinds of schemes, and they were drawings among people. I don't think that adds an element, and that is certainly not what any Texas court has determined. And I'll put it further. any court in the country has determined is an added element of a lottery. They also say the legislature has discretion to determine what is and is what is not a lottery. They rely to some extent on Owens versus State, the Amarillo no petition opinion for that proposition, but I think the Supreme Court case that remanded this case has taken care of that argument for us. The truth of the matter is, Justice Boyd, writing in that part for a unanimous court, says this: the legislature exercises powers the Constitution says it doesn't have. That is, if it permits lotteries when it only has the power to prohibit them, courts take the Constitution's word over the legislature's word. And they say that the Constitution commands that no laws be passed allowing lotteries. Therefore, they have to be prohibited. So, taking a look at all that, is there anything in any case that we see that says you can do this by legislative enactment rather than constitutional amendment? Chief Justice Jefferson said no in Hardy versus State, in Berry versus State in 1898 in response to legislation. The Court of Criminal Appeals said no. Tussie versus State in 73, as I told you before, dealt with a legislative attempt to do it, and they said no.
Well, so, Mr. Keltner, so if I understand your position correctly from your brief, you're saying that the legislature is not empowered at all to carve out any sort of exception, such as, well, if it's a small amount or something like that. So if we agree with that, what is the practical effect on existing businesses?
On existing businesses? Mm-hmm. Well, first off, let's talk about that. The Chuck E. Cheese, Dave and Buster's, Main Event, and the like. And the Supreme Court actually asked this, Justice Blacklock asked specifically this question. Here's the answer. Those are games of chance. They are not lotteries. There is no chance involved. There is some skill, bowling, some kinds of pinball, other types of machines deal with someone winning and getting it right, not on the effort of chance. Those are radically different and would not be impacted by this decision. It's just like horse racing. Horse racing has been, it's illegal in Texas, but it's not unconstitutional. Same with dog racing. There is a skill in handicapping horse races. There's a debate currently in one part of the gaming public, and that is, well, what about a bet on an NFL game or a basketball game or any kind of game? Well, those are handicapped, and their arguments that they are making is it's not a lottery. It is basically handicapping. That's why bettors and people who set the line give points and things like that is more of an issue of skill.
So maybe this is too theoretical, but I'm just curious. So if the Chuck E. Cheese games and all of those are games of skill, they wouldn't have been illegal or unconstitutional in the first place, so why even need the fuzzy animal exception?
Because they weren't adopted for those. They were adopted earlier than those businesses. They were done for carnival games where you throw a ring or you shoot a basketball.
You don't think those are games of chance to a large degree?
Well, there is some chance to it, but they try to make it harder, and that's done intentionally. So the real truth of the matter is, no, I think that they're primarily skill rather than chance, and that's important. And it highlights, I mean, if you look at the city of Wink, the city of Wink is saying chance is the evil here. Chance is if you can just sit and do nothing and gamble your life away, that's what we want to prevent. That's what the framers said in 45 and again later as well in 1875. And that is, in fact, actually that difference highlights it. There's an issue about jurisdiction I'll probably have to talk more about in rebuttal, where they say this is a criminal statute. The big case on this is Leeper versus Texas Educational Agency, in which Justice Heck looked at the same kind of thing and said, no. If it doesn't criminalize nor provide a penalty, even though it's in the penal code or is in a statute that has a penal provision, it is not a criminal statute over which civil courts can't have jurisdiction. Wolford versus State carries it all the way, interpreting the very provision we have here, Chapter 47, saying, no, no, a consideration of that is not part of the penalty provision, therefore it's not a criminal law and civil cases.
Well, and maybe I'm misinterpreting the Supreme Court's opinion, but I wonder whether a couple of times they're, you know, they sort of lump the constitutionality and legality together in the same phrase, but they speak in terms of it's justiciable. So I wonder whether the Supreme Court, do you think, is signaling that they think that we do have the authority to rule on the constitutionality of the fuzzy animal exception?
They do. And that was argued at the oral argument in great detail, and I think the opinion leaves no doubt about that one.
When the core issue before the trial court, the construction of Chapter 2153?
Yes, and that is also the big substance, actually, of the Supreme Court opinion as well, that what the Supreme Court held and disagreed with the trial court, and this court as well, but primarily with the trial court, and they said, look, 2153 has something that is almost a condition precedent to its application, and that is whether the gambling device is constitutional or illegal. That is the basis for the opinion. Judge Wilkinson went the other way on that, saying that it was constitutional, and she looked directly at the statute itself.
But purely from a jurisdictional standpoint,
yes,
there's no question that the trial court, as a civil court, could have construed Chapter 2153.
I believe so. I think there's no doubt. And let me just put it this way. The Morales rule, which is the rule that would say that a civil court has some limits on its jurisdiction, specifically does not apply in this case, and the authority for that is both Leeper and Wolford as well.
Thank you. Would you please add a minute to Appley's argument time?
May it please the court, it is very nice to be back in person as well. As a lifelong father of three boys who went to Chuck E. Cheese for every birthday celebration, I can tell you those are games of pure chance. There are many games, there are no skill whatsoever involved in Chuck E. Cheese. It is 100% pure chance. However, worthy opposing counsel Justice Keltner, I think, has focused in incorrectly and too narrowly. The structure of this court and the statutory and constitutional framework is much broader. We first know that under the Texas Constitution, that if the Constitution does not define the term lottery, great deference, the implementation, the execution, is left and delegated to the Texas legislature. It's not the role for the courts to come in and judicially go to the Constitution and do a strike through of the line on the Constitution where it says lottery and then insert and judicially implement and put the word gambling in there, because that's the real terminology they want to use. They want to transfer the word lottery and insert the word gambling.
But didn't the framers have some definition of the word lottery in mind when they wrote it into the Constitution?
I believe they probably did. And the first rule of strict constructionist and textualism is you look to the text of the language. Second, the legislature has spoken, and we did cite in our briefs, and the Supreme Court has cited in footnote 2, that the Texas legislature has enacted a definition.
But doesn't the Supreme Court apply textualism to statutory interpretation, but originalism to constitutional interpretation?
I think both. I think the first test is textualism, to look to the text.
Right, but when dealing with constitutions, doesn't the court look to originalism? And a component of originalism is to define the term as it was understood at the time it was drafted.
I think you're partly correct. I think it is a tool. It is one of the governing doctrines of interpretation. The way I view it, and the first tool is the text and whether or not they, in fact, did define it. The case law of the Texas Supreme Court, this court, has repeatedly held, if the Constitution does not define it, that is delegated to the legislature. And that's what the legislature has done in 47.017. And Justice Basil, you correctly pointed out there absolutely is an added element among people, and it's critical, and it is a chief characteristic of lotteries that is different than the term gambling. If they wanted to use the term gambling, they could. Well, the legislature came in and did.
And the added element is, again, from your perspective, the drawing among persons?
Correct.
And what Texas case contains that element, that added element?
Well, I'm looking at the Texas Supreme Court opinion in this case and section 47.01 that defines lottery. And it defines, it says, that is any scheme or procedure whereby one or more prizes are distributed by chance among persons who have paid or promised consideration for a chance to win anything of value.
But I thought you were using 47.017 with respect to your argument about what occurred in 1980, that in some way that was an acquiescence by the legislature to that definition.
To be correct, and you're correct, we are construing the Constitution as of 1980, in which it deleted and retracted and restricted the definition of lottery, even more restricted. I think Justice Keltner would have a better argument under the old Constitution, under 1980, where it talked about a lottery scheme. That was removed in 1980. In response, 13 years later, we have the fuzzy animal exception that was authorized it. So when you look again, everything points, I believe, from starting from the top of the Texas Constitution, not defined. We still believe it doesn't mean among people because it distinguishes it from gambling. Two, the Texas legislature has come in and implemented the fuzzy animal exception. Three, the Texas legislature has come in and defined lottery among people. And we cited a number of cases that have used that and historically used among people. I will say the Mississippi Supreme Court, which we cited at length in the Knight case, did an excellent job of discussing this distinction between gambling and lottery. And the term lottery is so broad, it will encompass virtually any type of business of chance. Life insurance, the stock market, any of those things would be so broad, a game of chance, that possibly couldn't be it. And the legislature came in and narrowed it and said among persons. So as a judicial branch, a third branch of our government, this court is to interpret the Constitution and the legislative acts, but not to come in and rewrite.
Can I ask you something, Mr. Michelle?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is bingo a lottery?
A bingo is if you use those terms, they are a different form of a lottery.
Okay. So do you think that the legislature could have just enacted a statutory exception for charity bingo? I mean, why did they need a constitutional amendment for that? And wouldn't need a constitutional amendment for something like a fuzzy animal exception?
That's a very good question, and it's not necessarily whether they have to or they don't have to. My first answer is, right, we resolve all of these disputes by specific constitutional language for clarity. That's the first step. Second, if they wanted to implement a constitutional amendment as to bingo, which they did, I think what it does is it rested assured for the industries that were going to come in and do that, that they had this constitutional amendment clearly defining bingo. Now, having said that, one of the defining characteristics between gambling and a lottery is that a lottery, going back, and we do think that is the common ordinary term of a lottery. I will tell you, when I came to this case, I never thought Chuck E. Cheese was a lottery. I never thought an eight-liner was a lottery, my common understanding. And the big distinction that I think we all think about what a lottery is it is among people. And the reason why the morals of the 1800s were different, as we've cited here, is that they infest the whole community, reach every class, prey upon the hard-earned savings of the poor, and plunder the ignorant and simple. Whereas in comparison, other forms of gambling affect only a few individuals. So if you do go back in time and look at the original text of what you're talking about and why did they use the term lottery and not gambling, it's because a lottery had that connotation back then that it sweeps across the entire population and can affect the population and the ills of the whole. Individualized gambling was not put in the Constitution. And so therefore, we believe when you look at the structures from the statutory framework, the dictates the Supreme Court has given us and the differences between constitutional when undefined, the mandate that is presumed, the statutory actions are presumed to be legislative. They have the burden to prove that they're unconstitutional. They have the burden to prove that there's no reasonable construction in any way that this entire statute must fail. I would submit to the court that based on the Constitution, based on the legislative action, and based on the direct legislative action of defining lottery to what I think all of us thought was more common, was among people, and that was confirmed by an exhaustive opinion by the Mississippi Supreme Court. If you note, in their brief, they even cite, in footnote number 17, they cite to the a Fifth Circuit case in which they talk about, well, a lottery means a game of chance unless maybe it's defined by statute. And then, of course, a lot of the cases they are citing are pre-1980 amendment. They are from the 1800s, and they're not construing the Constitution as it sits here today before this court, and it's not interpreting the legislative history and the legislative enactment as we sit here today. I will say briefly on the judiciable interest, Justice Kerr, I'm not sure it's clear from the Supreme Court's opinion. I'll confess, I've looked it over a number of times, and I really can't tell. I think I don't agree with Justice Keltner that it's perfectly clear, but I think it's somewhat unclear what the remand was on that topic. And I would discuss some principles I think that would be useful in analyzing it, because I'll state here, I don't know that it is particularly clear. I think the court could infer that it tangentially got there, but it certainly didn't expressly say it. The 2153, I think clearly the court had jurisdiction on that, but I don't believe it had jurisdiction. A civil court has jurisdiction to make a declaratory judgment as to the penal code and its applicable language. And the reason why I say that, Leeper, I don't think really answers the question. The two cases we cite do discuss the ability of a civil court to make a declaratory judgment as to the validity of a criminal statute. Now, they try to say that the fuzzy animal exception is not a criminal statute imposing criminal liability. They're saying it's an exception.
Are you just putting this case in some kind of jurisdictional no man's land? The court has to construe 2153, but you're saying because that determination requires the construction of a penal statute, the civil court doesn't have jurisdiction to do it?
You know, Justice Basil, I was faced with that exact no man's land about 10 years ago in this court, and Justice Walker poured me out because we had represented some trucking haulers who were getting tickets. And so we tried to file a civil lawsuit to say that the roadway was and the civil ordinance was unconstitutional for impeding upon us. We got kicked out of court.
Don't blame Place 5.
Pardon?
I said don't blame Place 5.
And so Justice Basil, I was in the same position you were. I was somewhat at a loss, and so we were then put to the task, which we did not do, was to go violate the statute and then go prosecute or get criminally charged with the violation and then challenge the constitutionality of the statute in criminal court. So the answer is yes, sometimes we are, given our bifurcated system, which the Supreme Court has articulated between our courts of criminal appeals and courts of the Court of Criminal Appeals. I mean, the Supreme Court, I apologize. But those are some of the pains we often suffer in our federal society between state and federal and criminal and civil. But that having been said, with regard to the history of the Texas Constitution in 1980, when it eliminated the lottery schemes, you will see at least opposing counsel's best argument would have been under that, although I don't think it still carries the day. But if you're going to expand the definition of lottery schemes, which was removed in 1980, once again, I think in this particular situation, with regards to the core issue and the framework that the court will be looking at, the Wink case is from 1936. as well as the Randall case of 1874. Now, we distinguish Randall as it applies and has a limited view, but also with regard to these other courts of criminal appeals opinions, they still don't lock issue with what is underlining who has the right to define lottery. Is that we know it's first the Constitution, we know second that it's the legislature, and third, it's the court coming in the absence of those gaps. Based on this record, we believe that the Constitution, using the term lottery versus—
Are you arguing that if the legislature fails to define it, the courts have no ability to define it?
No, Your Honor. No, Your Honor. I wouldn't go that far. No. However, when the Constitution doesn't define it, given our constitutional framework and our constitutional structure, they then place that burden upon the legislature in the first right to implement, to construe, and to conduct or define any of those implementations. That is a deference. The voters of the state of Texas, the citizens of the state of Texas, had the opportunity, should they so wanted to mandate what that definition of a lottery is. I think originalism is, at the same time, by not so doing that, they defer to the legislature.
And then it's not reviewable by the court. Is that your argument?
No, of course the court has to interpret the various languages of the Constitution, the various language that the legislature views. By no means am I trying to—
How do we interpret the word lottery in the Constitution? What are we supposed to look to? What are we supposed to look to determine what was in the mind of the framers?
I think in the cases we've cited, the first thing you look to is the frame, because they did not define it. If you want to go beyond the text and then look to originalism and the original intent, their original intent was then we will then trust and empower the legislature to so do that.
Well, or couldn't it also be that when the Constitution was adopted, everybody had a common understanding of what lottery was, and so the voters knew what they were voting on, and it was implicit what everybody thought?
You certainly could. To me, these are all facets of arguments. When I took my constitutional law call, you had six arguments when you do your constitutional analysis. That is one of the tools that the courts have to use, you could certainly look at. Both sides have cited that. We disagree. We think the additional element of among people is an element. We do have the option. The benefit of the legislature coming in and having defined lottery. So if I were to do pecking order, first you look to the text of the Constitution. Second, the Constitution, since it didn't define it, empowers it to the legislature. The third step is the legislature did come in and define it. That is my summation of the analytical analysis that we should take. Now, we have cited a number of cases that have include among people in the definition. We've used the common dictionary definition of it, and I think it's also consistent with the policy that we've cited that gambling is an individual, perhaps morally wrong attitude in the 1800s, but lottery rose to the level to make it to the Constitution because it had a broad swath over among people that we do see now.
Well, sort of along those lines and maybe switching gears a little bit.
Yes.
Do you agree with the city's argument that the operators concede that these eight-liners are illegal gambling devices but for the fuzzy animal exception?
I wouldn't say it that strongly or overtly. No, I think what we did is we entered into stipulations that were on the record and filed a record, which we both sides entered into. But as far as being illegal, I think both sides, and I may be wrong on this, both sides have taken the position that the legislatures under the code and under 47.01(4)(b) that is the exception that would otherwise allow it to be.
I thought that there was some testimony that was quoted by one of your clients outside the stipulations that yes, the operators are operating under 47.01(4)(b).
Correct. I agree with
so,
you. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. court has no further questions, we would request that should the court reach the jurisdictional issue, obviously we don't think the court can judicially declare 47.014B unconstitutional. I think the Texas Supreme Court, once again, I think was, it could be argued at best from the appellant standpoint, it's implicit, although they don't think an instanding or jurisdiction can be raised at any time. So regardless, I think one way or the other, the court may need to have specifically addressed that point, whether the court thinks there's jurisdiction or whether the court doesn't think there's jurisdiction. And in all candor, the court did send it back to this court to address these issues for the first time. So I think it would be beneficial that if we had a discussion about that topic in the first instance. Secondarily, we clearly don't believe that the statute, the fuzzy animal exception, is unconstitutional. We've gone over that argument, and the court should not declare it unconstitutional, and that's a specific question that the Supreme Court did ask the court to address. And if the court has no other questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very briefly, Matt, let me first address the question the Chief Justice raised. You're quite right. I use the term textualism. The reason I did it is the Stringer versus Sendent case by Judge Baker uses that when he really did mean originalism. When you're looking at a constitutional issue, you look at originalism. You could fall back on textualism. Technically, they are different theories. But if you look at Justice Scalia's opinion in the Heller case, for example, you see that difference. Judge Baker in Stringer versus Sendent Mortgage just used it as textualism, saying we look to what the idea was at the time. And I think that's what needs to be looked at. Justice Kerr, you have asked a couple of questions about businesses and the fuzzy animal exception and how it applies. Again, that came up at the Supreme Court. We had the back and forth we did. Remember these two things. There is a difference between gambling and lotteries. As the Texas Supreme Court has held in two of the older cases, gambling at that time was not illegal, even. Most types of gambling did not become illegal too late in Texas. Lotteries were always both illegal and unconstitutional. So the truth of the matter is we've looked at them differently because of the one difference that the city of Wink points out, and every court to have considered the issue in Texas goes along with that. I don't know. I read the Mississippi opinion, and I understand where it's going to. Its constitutional provision is significantly different than ours, but the truth of the matter is the chance element is what the issue is. Let me talk about the 1980 amendments to the Constitution, because Mr. Michel is said in the brief and intimated today that the removal of language from the Constitution in 1980 demonstrated that things like the operation of slot machines and eight-liners was taken out. Not true. I can tell you that for two reasons. First off, look at the AG opinions after that by Republican and Democratic AGs who do not believe that to be true, or they would have mentioned it in their opinions, and they go up and down the constitutional issue. There was a reason, though. They removed it. They removed the language about gift enterprises and evasions of the lottery principles because in the 80 Amendment, they allowed charitables, veteran groups, firefighters, and those things to have bingo, which they further defined in great detail in item C in the exception. That language would have contradicted what they did in the constitutional amendment, so it had to come out. Any doubt about that, look at the subsequent amendments that take away raffles and well, which would otherwise be lotteries. In Owens versus State, one thing that is very clear. That's their big case. They don't mention it to you in great detail today, but that is the case they rely on. In Owens, we think it is wrongly decided. Greg Abbott thinks it's wrongly decided. John Cornyn thinks it's wrongly decided. But the truth of the matter is it narrowed its opinion. The court didn't say anything about the operations of slot machines, not a word. In fact, it said they may well be unconstitutional, may be unconstitutional, may be illegal under 4701. Both those things may be true. We're not addressing them. We're addressing only possession, and the reason they were addressing possession is nothing in the Constitution says that possession of an eight-liner or slot machine is unconstitutional.
Before you run out of time, Mr. Kellner, let me ask you, Mr. Michel gave sort of his 1-2 prioritization of what he thinks we should address. How would you rank the?
Here's how I would run through it. I think I would follow Justice Boyd's opinion. And he tells you pretty much what to do. I think the first thing is to look and to determine the unconstitutional issue. I think what you have to look at there is the originalist, what the idea was, what did the framers and the voters determine that a lottery was at that time. We know that. We know that because Randall's opinion states that in great detail. The Constitutional Convention was mainly by lawyers, by the way, and as a result of that, they knew what the definition was. So that's one. Once you make that decision and you decide it's unconstitutional, I think the issue is under the Supreme Court's opinion, then 2153 would not apply, and therefore there would be no preemption. And the question may arise.
And what effect would that have on the city regulations?
The city would be free to regulate. Remember, the only reason the state can't regulate is under 2153, it said it wasn't doing that for gambling machines that were determined to be either unconstitutional or illegal. The state could get rid of that, then they could certainly regulate. The city is under no such prohibition.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, we appreciate your argument here today. It was very helpful to us. We like seeing you in the courtroom and have enjoyed it very much. Your case has been submitted, and we thank you again, and we adjourn, and you're free to go about your business.
Thank you.